Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
We're back with X Factor.
It's been a minute.
It's been a month.
Yes.
I guess news, if we want to cover what's going on currently, Asta is up temporarily from a nap. She will nap shortly. Nick and Nora are napping.
They are loaves in their boxes.
Yes, in their little hidey boxes. Thank you, Target, for having the perfect size for our buns.
Yes, because they don't like us being in the kitchen cooking or us being in the kitchen cleaning or us being in the kitchen at all, really. That's true. So
We are preparing for C2E2. We're leaving in a few days. I still have a whole outfit to sew together, but at least everything's cut. So
you're in good company, I guess, with the what they call the con crunch.
Yeah, I mean, everyone doing cosplay stuff is in more of a crunch because that's a lot of detail work, I imagine, and painting or applying things. Mine is just sewing stuff together and ironing, because the most surprising thing for people that don't sew and do things, the amount of ironing and pressing you do in the process.
I did not know that ironing was a thing for this, but it sort of makes sense. You need your fabric as flat as possible.
Especially for seams and everything.
Yeah.
And for hems. Like,
you don't need a dimple.
And it's just a lot of work. So it's like a constant setup of, here's my ironing board and iron, and I need to go and bring this over and do a little tiny thing. And then I'm done until I'm not.
Yes.
So
that's in your future this afternoon.
I know you're going to be outside.
Yes. There's two bellworts to plant and three trout lilies, which are shady woodland plants.
Yes.
But the trout lilies that we planted last fall are up.
They are. And they haven't been dug up by squirrels, which I can't say about the leeks that are planted in the woods.
Ramps.
Whatever. It's an onion. It's an onion.
The native version of onion garlicky things.
Yes.
Although nodding onion is, but that's more like a prairie plant.
Mm. It's sad because those four plants cost like $30.
I know.
Foragers
love ramps.
They do.
And it's sort of the poster child for foraging culture where you don't take enough to kill the whole thing. Like,
yeah,
if it's a small clump, you leave it. You just get excited that you found it and that in future years you might get some.
Mm.
And if it's a big enough clump, you can take a few leaves, maybe even a bulb, because the bulb will then, that absence will make more space for the what's left to divide and further propagate. But yeah, they're a big deal.
Maybe we put some of that metal grating over it.
Yes, because we found one of the gentians has been dug up.
Yeah.
But the others that are underneath, like, it's just a bit of fencing that's sort of like curved over to create like a little
dome.
Little dome.
So it can still get rain and sunlight and do its thing, but
yeah, there's a whole bunch of leaves underneath, which eventually we might need to move, but not yet.
No.
They're still insulating the ground because the past flowers and the other cream gentians are just barely emerging.
Yeah.
So there's
stuff for you to do this afternoon, but sunny and warm.
Yeah, warmer than yesterday.
Yeah.
And yeah, the bluebells are up. The new trout lilies are up.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of bee balm and some of the natives are coming back. And the prairie smoke, we planted so much prairie smoke last year.
Shout out to the grant I got for planting pollinators.
Lawns to legumes.
So it is going to be an active afternoon after this recording.
I know, and I'm the worst with outdoor stuff because I'm like, oh, I can do this and then this. Sort of like how I rage clean.
Yes.
It all barrels one thing into another.
So maybe I'll be the time person. Like, I'll do my sewing and have things planned out in stages. And when I'm done with that, I'll go out and grab you and be like,
we're done.
It's been 3 hours.
Yeah, and I forgot the seeds to direct sow, but you have your carrots here.
Mm.
And when I come up on Friday, before we leave for C2E2, I can bring the other seeds and we can get things like turnips planted.
Yeah, so maybe that's what you focus on, I think.
The garden beds?
Those beds that will be utilized for those things.
Yes, I am not generally a list person, but I've made a map within Google Sheets and a list of what goes into each bed.
I mean, you've also started tracking your comics.
Well, yes.
With a list, which is good.
Because I ended up with four or three versions of Son of Satan number four.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it became necessary.
That's the warning sign. when you're like, oh shit, I already had this.
And I've got like two copies of each Cyrano, but that's okay because I love all the covers.
Yeah.
And I did the backing thing. So I have the trade paper bag, even though it's a hardcover, which is beautiful and signed.
Yep.
And I got the Pride special, which is a really good story. And I don't think you've read it yet.
Not yet. No.
But it's so good.
I've been reading Captain America. So
the Mark Gruenwald one?
Yes.
Yes.
I have my list written on a post-it here, right here. I hope everyone could hear that waving in the wind of what I'm looking for at C2E2. And I need to put that into like a Word document and print it because I hate fumbling with my phone through the spreadsheet and like different tabs and stuff while you're like one hand in a box, one hand on the phone, and you're trying to figure things out.
Yeah. And luckily when I was digging through long boxes looking for the D-Man issues, like I would just put my phone up on top and it worked out because there was no one else around.
Exactly. Like cons are so different because it's like people swarming boxes.
And no one needs to steal my phone.
Right. So it will be a very packed next week for us.
I know.
It's a quick trip to Chicago.
It's only 6 hours.
Yeah, it's less than 6 hours actually from my place to where we're going, which is great.
Yeah. But we still need to stop for gas in Wisconsin just to make not have to pay Chicago prices.
And to stretch our legs.
Yeah. And on the way back, we might go to the Norske Nook and get one of their gigantic pies.
Oh. Yeah, because we took that Monday off after C2E2.
Yeah, which will also be good.
So we can get up here and rest because it's 12 hours of driving, which is a lot in 2 days.
Yeah.
It's a con and we're both introverts. And
yes,
hanging out with good friends, but it's also like having
children.
Yes. So it'll be great. It's just so much. We're in Chicago for less than 48 hours.
Yeah. And then there'll be lots of garden stuff to do still.
Yeah.
Maybe the tomatoes can go outside.
Mm.
We potted them into something bigger. And I was like, I can put them in the garden. It's so warm today.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 3 days later, there was snow in the air.
Yeah.
So they went back into pots and back into the basement. But the parsley I left outside was living its best life.
Good.
And the tray of onions.
Mm-hmm.
So they should be fine and happy.
X Factor. We're doing four issues today, 229 to 232. The theme is...
Who's killing... they keep killing Madrox.
Yes.
This was... When I was first reading these, this is a stretch when I had a hard time putting it down.
Oh.
Because I was like, how could they kill Madrox? He got stabbed. And...
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I just needed to know. So I just kept reading. And then it would be like 1:30 in the morning. And I would think to myself, self, you know better.
Yeah.
What did you do? So he is in the murder room.
It's the murder room. And he's like, how am I here? Because there's dead me and there's dead Layla.
Yeah. And there's a dude delivering ice. And naturally, he freaks out. So. And we should maybe not be as detailed, and I need to remember that because this is four issues in one episode.
Yes. We don't need to go box by box.
It's
panel
true.
By panel. So he runs down to the lobby because it's his wedding night and the reception is still going on.
Yeah.
He and Layla had departed, but the guests are still at the hotel bar.
Including Rain and Teresa and Richter. And he just goes off on Rain.
Yeah.
Because his version... What he knows of this vision that is now true is that Rain was the one that killed him.
Yeah.
And her and Layla.
And
so he goes off. Everyone's like, no, Rain has been here.
Like, dude, we've been hanging out since you and Layla went upstairs.
And Logan's there.
Wolverine's here.
Banshee's there.
And
which is weird because,
yeah,
or dude Banshee, because he's not dead either.
Yeah. And Wolverine is on the cover of this trade paperback, too.
Yes.
Because you need to get those sales, I guess.
Yeah. And Quicksilver's there too. So Quicksilver runs up, verifies what happened, and there's all sorts of fun confusion about, like, is this an original? Is this the dupe? Was that the dupe?
And Wolverine's like, we need to scatter before the police come.
Yes, because it was not actually Rain. It was Rain's daughter.
Yeah, not her son.
Not her son.
It's her daughter with Hrimhari.
Yes, who is like an evil demon now.
Yes.
That she had sent to Asgard. Like, there wasn't the same sort of demonic spree, chopping spree, trying to get the baby.
Yes, and she didn't give up the baby. Like, right. She tried her best.
And the baby was just evil.
Yes.
We got a old school Shatterstar.
Yeah, with this braid.
And the red cowl and the white suit. And Richter's like, I can't stand this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what? And he's calling Longshot bro. Oh, yeah. Brother, father, son.
We don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
So things are really, the theme of this is like, shit's wrong. This is not correct.
Yes, there are so many question marks in this book. Emanuela Lupercino is back on art and penciling.
It looks really good.
It's the quintessential X-Factor look, according to me. And it's just so good. So big reveals. They start running. The police arrive. And Madrox is outside. He made it. He's hiding behind a dumpster, runs down an alley, and is attacked by Verona, who it's revealed was paid / begged by Layla to do the murders.
Interesting.
We don't ever find out why.
So she's really confused.
Yes.
She's like, I thought I killed you.
And I'm just going to finish the job. It's what I was paid for. Blah. And
Madrox makes dupes.
Makes so many dupes.
And dupes have different functions in these different realities.
Yeah. One of them shoots Verona with some green energies. And the dupes are like, what? When you make a dupe in this world, each of us has a different power.
Yeah.
And Madrox is like, oh, okay. There's like a thing version. There's a human torch version. He leaves them to go and fight Verona.
Mm-hmm.
He sees Elder Trip.
It's and like, he's like, what?
Oh. Right before a very drunk Val Cooper runs him over.
Like, because they had been talking about her in the bar, like, have you seen Val? Like,
she was two sheets to the wind.
Yeah. So Val Cooper, drunk driving,
smashes Madrox into a brick wall. To hear her slurring my name and something that sounds like mad ducks.
Oh, no.
Insult to injury.
And then he dies. But then he appears in a hellscape.
And there's another Madrox dead, like still smoking.
Crispy.
Just was left in the oven too long.
Yes, this is the Colonel's extra crunchy recipe.
Like eyes melted out of his skull. But still has the shirt.
Yep. So we're starting to get some clues. We've seen two dead Madroxes in this issue. And
yes,
Jamie Prime has generated, like he has appeared.
At the moment of those deaths.
Yes.
So, 2:30.
We
do get new title pages.
It's a title page with everyone's face, sort of like Krakoa-esque, where it's the close-up of an illustration of them from the actual issue.
But they're in color.
And it's their name and their superhero name. And we're on the same page about Layla's.
They call her Butterfly, and it's just like, no.
What? Oh.
No one calls her that. No one has ever called her that.
So no, someone should have workshopped that, Peter David.
Yes. Yeah. So like Banshee, Teresa Cassidy, Sonic Scream.
So it describes name, power. It's cool. Like, then you know who you're getting in the book, which comes into play in the next issue.
Yes.
Even more so.
So we get Layla in the morgue, just sitting. And Teresa's trying to do the nice thing and talk to her and comfort her and maybe get her out of the morgue.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts her hand on Layla's shoulder and she's like, remove the hand or I'll do to your fingers what you did to Jamie's. And there's a yoink.
And I oop.
And I oop. And Logan is there.
Looking hunky.
He is looking. This is maybe, I don't mind this Logan.
This is like 2012 Logan, 2011.
We'll find out. This is, yeah, 2011 Logan is the best Logan.
It's not bad. This is when, is this when Wolverine and the X-Men was being published? I think it's near. Maybe,
because it's not, they're not in Utopia with Cyclops. Logan has gone back to the mansion.
Yeah.
And like the uniform is working. Like it's nice to see his face and like the ruffles. Like it's not taut. So yeah, it's loose, and that's drawn well. Shatterstar is drawn really well.
Yes.
On multiple occasions.
We haven't, the best Shatterstar has looked until recently with Philip Seavey.
Yes.
Who is doing God's work with a beard on Shatterstar.
But if you're looking for the clean cut Shatterstar, this is the best Shatterstar.
So the team is there. And they're sort of coming to terms, like Madarax is dead.
Yeah. Rain is freaking out because Logan's here, and bad things usually happen to her when Logan is around. Like, she's still blocked out whatever she was doing with him and X-Force. And Shatterstar is oblivious and wonderful. He's like, oh, Richard's like, guess who's here? And Shatterstar says, Justin Bieber? And no. And Wolverine is the second guess, and he makes a joke, well, he tends to be everywhere. Which apparently has been a thing since 2011.
Peter David's meta commentary here. I mean,
not wrong.
No, Logan has been everywhere since the 90s.
Yeah. But he's having like a good conversation. It's not just bub. It's not just life is pain.
Yes.
It's him having an honest to goodness conversation with Layla.
Which I feel he's devolved into that lately.
Like he used to be more verbose before.
And Krakoa era Wolverine just went back to like murder
bubs.
Yes. And that's it. So I appreciate this because he's more of a leader.
Yeah. And like getting to talk to her on her level, like he's kneeling as she's sitting. Mm-hmm. And it's acknowledging like, I'm not one of your teammates. It's easier to talk to me. Maybe.
Yeah.
He's like, yes, because we can both relate to not belonging even and just pretending that we belong.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get up to Longshot, Monet, and Guido, and they're having a whole conversation about the fact that Guido has no soul. And Guido brings up a good point. Like, there's a bazillion bad guys out there who have souls, so why can't there be a good guy who doesn't have a soul? Isn't that a benefit to the team?
Mm-hmm.
And Teresa's like, yeah, he can do stuff that we can't, like,
yeah,
morally, ethically, like, we don't have to worry about going to hell if Guido does the thing. Which still leads to a whole thing, confrontation with Monet.
It's very odd. And this is something that I've seen online criticism of Peter David for, is how he's approaching Monet's religious beliefs. Like, how he is portraying Islam. Which I'm not seeing that come through. Like, I feel it's religion in general that he is addressing. It's not specifically, like, there's a lot more of the Catholicism and
the guilt
and
that impression.
That. Yeah.
Rather.
And I feel it's more like a beginning understanding of Islam here, where it's like the question posed and like, well, don't you have a hell? And that sort of thing. I see it's more educational, I feel, for the reader.
I mean, it's still put in a position of opposition to Catholicism and yes, not like this is a Muslim thing because it's a Muslim thing. It's I need to talk about this to give a comparison to Catholicism,
yeah,
versus like talking about it for the sake of itself and the value of itself.
That's a good point. Regardless, I feel that this page especially, where it's like talking about the different concepts of hell, like, I don't need that.
Like it feels a bit.
I think Guido made a good point that you just phrased, where he is talking about like bad guys have souls. Like, we could have left it at that. We didn't need to dig into the religious beliefs and what that hell constitutes, because I feel the concept of hell in Marvel, period, is so far removed from religion. Like, think about Mephisto and Hellstrom and things like, it's hell.
It's very Judeo-Christian.
It's Judeo-Christian, but there, it's gone off and done its own thing. Just like,
where's its own world and its own realm, as opposed to like an actual afterlife.
Like Asgard. Asgard is rooted in religion. No, ancient Norse religion. Yeah. But Marvel made its own thing. Like,
oh,
it's just a realm.
And Limbo is a realm.
Yes.
Not a true afterlife.
Yes. So it's a different approach than I've seen to Marvel Hell.
It's not also the point that Teresa raised. Like, it doesn't have to go into the hell direction. You can still have that debate of, do we have a wet work person on the team who can do this stuff that we refuse to?
Yeah.
And just leave it at that. So
anyway, they move beyond that. Because then Pip the Troll is there. He is your least favorite member of this book.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole exchange where like Monet is talking about Guido, even though Guido's in the room. And he's like, oh, you're talking to me, after she calls him a freak. And she's like, no, I'm talking to the freak standing behind you. And that's where Pip is. And she's like, oh, sorry, I didn't see you there.
And he insults her.
Yes.
And tells her to like zip up her suit because he's tired of looking at her breasts.
Even I'm tired of looking at your rack. Like, that's super cringy and not great.
Yeah.
I do not care for that aspect.
No. And I get that Pip is gruff and
coarse.
Yes. I guess I need to go back and read Warlock in the Infinity Watch, which is what he's referencing
right
in his dialogue, where he's like,
you don't know anything about death and hell and souls. Like, I lived in the soul gem. I know.
I've died a few times and come back. I know about death.
Yeah.
So I feel I need to go back and read that, because that's where all that happens.
Oh.
He's part of the Infinity Watch.
Yeah. And
I don't know why he's here.
Correct. Because he's done some shady things before about like who his true employer is, that we don't actually know. And the whole like thing about Monet's outfit, I don't know if that's a way to course correct from her being so centered in the male gaze or not.
Maybe
that's just me looking for some redeeming quality to why that line of dialogue is in there.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, we can clean, this is a way for us to clean it up and not put her at the center of the male gaze.
Yeah.
Because she had been for so long, and like people walking in on her naked, or
yes,
the cortex thing where she was running around naked, like to appease some adolescent.
Yeah. Boys. And I mean, we can't be apologists either. Like, I love Peter David's writing, but there are aspects to it like Monet where it's like, oh, this could have been done a little better. You could have done this a little differently to not be like,
put her in this
female
position.
Sex object.
Yes.
And there, I mean, just like any comic writer, there are many critics for Peter David, especially this run and how he treats certain characters. And Monet is one of them.
Yeah.
I feel. Yeah, maybe we'll do a retrospective.
Yeah.
But I don't want to delve too far into it, because there are things we can pick about any run, any writer, that are not great.
True.
No aspect of a writer's run, especially this long on a book, is 100% flawless.
Right.
I'm reading Grunewald right now, like we mentioned, Captain America. He was on that book for 10 years. And overall, like, that is a celebrated run. It is. It set so many things up for Cap. But I run across certain panels and I'm like, that's gross, or that's real cringy. Like, oh, no, thank you. Overall, fantastic. But when you start analyzing it and criticizing it, that's when you can pick up. And I think it's the sign of a mature reader where you can balance those things. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not writing something off because it did one thing wrong. You really have to look at it and view it as a piece of literature and think, okay, well, There are goods, there are bads. That's where you can rate things. Like, that's why rating scales on Amazon are 5 stars. It's not one or nothing.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, that's a tangent.
Because we get that cringy moment balanced with this page with Wolverine and Layla. And some exposition about, I got a med student to sew up his body. Like, it's easy to repair damage when you don't need to worry about
bleeding out.
Bleeding out.
Yeah.
And Wolverine's like, but you know stuff, right? How did you not know this was coming? And we get a flashback to Layla writing a diary. And we don't get the end of this, what she's writing. But the way that she's setting up, it's something different about the team. They're about to go to the movie lot, and it's Monet and Longshot teaming up to deal with Blood. Well, I can't think of
it. Oh, it's a very 90s name.
Bloodbath.
Bloodbath.
Sorry, I was close.
Very 90s name.
Bloodface.
But also referenced in there is she's like, I wish Guido wasn't dead. He would have loved this. So that is what she's picking apart. She is like, I made the decision to save Guido. Therefore, this led to Jamie's death.
I'm being punished because I changed something from what it had been.
And she's taking it really personally because that's just it. She says, I'm being punished.
We don't typically see the vulnerable side of Layla Miller at all.
And we typically don't see this when it comes to timey-wimey shit in the Marvel Universe. People don't internalize it like that. They're like, I changed something, therefore the world changed. And, you know, it's not me being punished. It's more like, I made a mistake. How do we fix it?
Right.
This is her really stewing on it.
Right. That's based on her, like, who she loved was taken away because she changed what had happened.
Yes.
So it's a good conversation. We get the classic get it, got it, good, which transitions to Jamie's not good thought bubble as he's looking at this hellscape.
Yeah, he's like, what killed me? What happened here? Like, he got incinerated?
There's some vibrations, like, needs a place to hide. He'll just make do under a car. And then we go back to the team. Things are not going well with the discussion. Monet's bringing up Teresa's lengthy stay in the denial stage and still dealing with Guido not having a soul. Even Richter and Shatterstar are fighting because Guido's like, I'm still here. I'm actually fully alive. Like,
yeah.
Do you need me to watch me do 1,000 one-handed push-ups? And Shatterstar's like, yes, actually I would, which is what Richter takes exception to.
I just love how dumb and horny Shatterstar is.
Yes. But he also brings up a good point. Like, is Richter arguing this side because it's opposite of the side that Rain is on? Mm. Or because he actually believes in the point? And the whole back and forth between Monet and Teresa. So all that's happening in the background when we get a panel of Longshot just being like, so what's different about not having a soul? Like, just a total aside. So Logan breaks it up and introduces the idea that they bring someone in. There's some of the background of Utopia, why he's not there.
Mm.
And apparently Longshot and Dazzler are sexting. Not talking,
yeah,
but they'll sext.
Yes.
And she mentioned in passing what was happening. So the car that Jamie's hiding under gets lifted up and we see these gigantic Iron Man Sentinel things.
Yeah.
Even before the Krakoa Iron Man Sentinels. So back at base, they're talking about how Wolverine has a different view of things from Cyclops. That's why he's there. That segregating ourselves from humanity is damaging human mutant relations. And Monet and Teresa say at the same time, Jamie would have loved that and give each other a look, which is at least an element of humor in this otherwise like
pretty doom and gloom issue.
Heavy yeah. issue. And so Logan reveals who he's bringing in for extra leadership. It's Polaris and Havoc.
Yeah.
They have experience with X-Factor.
In the 90s. that we haven't seen.
No, correct.
But we know it because of action figures.
Because of action figures, because of Mr. Scott Free.
Yes.
So thank you for that, Scott. And yeah, Havoc looking real good.
Yeah.
Polaris.
That would be a fun outfit.
It would. I don't think it'd be much beyond the boots and the bodysuit.
Yeah.
Oh, and the cowl. Cowls that are hard to do.
Yeah. But I found a thing on Etsy for cowls.
Nice.
Like, and they do it in different colors. Like, you can get the regular black one, but they do other ones too.
Yeah.
I'm a bit freaked out because it laces up in the back.
Like a luchador mask?
Sort of, yeah.
Interesting.
Which then you're allowed to like size it to your head,
which is nice, and like make it not pull all your hair out.
Yep.
And Polaris is in her green hair, green face version of the Scarlet Witchy thingy.
It's basically green Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, which seems so impractical.
Yes.
Also, male gaze.
Yes. So that's where we are with the team.
Yep. And then we don't see them for the next two issues.
No. So say goodbye to the team for the rest of this episode.
Because on the data page, we get 8 multiple mans. Jimmy Madrox self-duplication. So the car is lifted up and the 2 Iron Man Sentinels are talking and they're like, something's off about this
like
one.
Oh,
he's out of phase, which is the thing we've seen in Star Trek. Like quantum signatures are different. So they take him back to the headquarters. There's the usual smart alecky stuff. And the receptionist at least finds him funny. And Madrox is like, great, I'm glad you do. You're the only one. And we get evil Tony Stark.
Mm.
Like, backlit. He
really is. He's in his office being evil.
Yeah. He just smacks Jamie for not giving answers and being snarky.
Yeah.
Because he legit does not know why he's time hopping or timeline hopping. And Tony's like, I'll tell you when you can go smack. And reveals the shackles are made of vibranium, so there's no vibration that gets to Jamie to create a dupe.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they get a lot of dialogue of what happened. So apparently Scarlet Witch in this reality said no more humans.
And not no more mutants.
Right.
And he was off in space.
So he missed most of it.
Yep.
And what happened to mutants in the normal timeline or reality happened to humans, and people with superpowers became like evil versions of themselves. So it's less of a totalitarian state with those gigantic Iron Man armors policing things as like trying to make some humanity survive.
Mm. And it was like a slower process.
Yeah.
That they died out. So.
Yeah, we get a creepy figure with a mechanical arm crawling up the wall, working with Trip Sr., who we hadn't seen since the wedding reality where Jamie got smashed into a wall.
And before that, it's been dozens of issues, I feel.
Yeah, like his arc ended in what, number 15?
Yeah.
Or so. So they're
chatting. Going on up. They're going to the penthouse suite.
I mean, the dude in red is doing all the work. Trip is just floating.
Yes.
Elder Trip. And he's like, I know stuff.
Ugh.
And in my head, I'm like, that's Label's line. You get that out of your mouth. So evil Tony Stark releases Madrox and is all in this thing of like, how do I get out of this reality? Like, mm-hmm. What are you doing? I'm sick and tired of fighting for survival. I want my options are different reality, go back in space. Or give up, and he wants to go to a different reality. And that's when the mysterious figure comes through. We learn that it's Deathlok, but he used to go by another name. And the other name, Box, is the reveal with the Captain America shield. And they're about to throw down.
Yeah, so obviously this is around the same time. It's a couple years after Civil War.
Right.
So
there are some veiled references to that.
So you have Tony Stark, Steve Rogers facing off again.
Yes. But this time it's like an evil twisted version.
Yes.
So Tony armors up. They brawl. The receptionist turns out to be a robot.
The receptionist, by the way, is Joan Rivers.
Really?
If you look at that face a few pages before when she's greeting everyone, it is straight up Joan Rivers.
Dot Matrix. Where did she go?
She's around somewhere. I just appreciated that.
Oh, yeah. Those cheekbones, yes. And those lips.
Yes.
And the hair. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
Yes. But she's a robot.
Oh, yes. So she helps in the battle against evil Deathlok. And meanwhile, Madrox and Elder Trip are trying to have some sort of conversation. Like, clearly he's blaming Elder Trip.
Mm-hmm.
And shockingly, Elder Trip doesn't know who Jiminy Cricket is. And all he can really tell Jamie is that the walls between realities are getting thinner. And you'll know what's happening when the skies start to bleed. As for who's responsible, I don't know. God, gods, Layla Miller, you take your pick.
Mm.
I enjoy that he's still so bitter about Layla kicking his ass.
Yes.
And in the battle, like, he's trying to get more answers out of Elder Trip before Madrox is part of this comedic train. Like, Iron Man knocks Deathlok into Madrox, who makes a dupe, and all four of them go flying out the window. Or at least two of them, the Madroxes do. And luckily, in this reality, dupes have powers too. This one has the power to fly.
Except. It lasts.
Between 5 and 20 seconds is all that Madrox gets out of a dupe. And instead of making it to another rooftop, he is released in midair. Ground gets closer and closer. There's a red splat panel. And evil dialogue, or like the black background, white text with the waviness to it. And oh, the disciple stirs. I thought you were dead for sure. And I would want to cosplay this Madrox look of the magical disciple, because it's like, it's, you think it's Doctor Strange, but it's Dormammu, who I recognize because of the video game stuff.
Dormammu.
Yes.
Yes, the Lego video game where I always play Dormammu because he has all the powers.
Or Ultimate Alliance 3 and that awful, awful battle.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, maybe you can work on that cosplay for Uncanny.
Yeah, like the boots are fun. I mean, the sash is fun. The giant coat with the pattern, the Madrox pattern is fun.
I mean, Demanda is going to be at Uncanny, and she does like one panel cosplays sometimes. So
yeah,
this could be like your one issue cosplay
of Madrox from this one particular issue.
Issue 231 to 232.
Yes.
And that's the end of the issue. We sort of see this reveal of
evil Dormammu is about to kill Madrox permanently again. Yeah. We get an ad for Avengers versus X-Men.
And the cover on this last issue we're covering is really fun. It's so outside the norm.
It is. It's
trippy.
Yeah, there's like a swirly pattern.
And it's David Yarden, who's done a ton of the covers.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't recognize it as his work.
It looks like a 70s thing with like the heavier block outline.
Yes.
And the spiral in the background. And it's like blue flames eating Madrox with the evil Dormammu in the background. It's a fun cover.
It's very much Steve Ditko, Doctor Strange.
I don't know what that means, but sure.
Very psychedelic.
Oh, yes.
So that was the inspiration, I'm sure, for this.
So Madrox tries to keep Dormammu, or like clearly this entity that's trying to kill him, talking while he finds the doorknob and runs outside, but he runs into a hellscape. There's like a Eye of Mordor thing happening.
In Manhattan.
There are lots of dragons, lots of demons. I feel like there was a cute thing with a lot of... Oh, there it is, with the tentacles and the suction cup.
I wanted to see if this was like an Inferno timeline. Like, I was trying to look for more visual clues.
I think it's a Doctor Strange plotline because they're referencing the Hells on Earth War.
Oh.
Like, it has a specific name in a dialogue box. So there's Brimstone, there's Heat... And
so much brimstone.
There's
a quote somewhere in there, like, it smells like a conference of night crawlers or something.
Yes. Poor Kurt.
I know.
And Evil Dormammu sends the flames of Faltine to kill him, but somehow Madrox puts up a shield. He's very confused. There are some golden bands of Sidorak happening.
And like this Dormammu is like, oh, you have powers.
I need to examine you.
Yeah.
He does like an evil mind meld situation. And we get a fun recap panel where things are in different colors. So the original stabbing is in Madrox green. We get the wedding car crash in orange. We get the Verona disembowelment in pink. Deathlok and Iron Man fighting in red. And Trip in like a turquoisey bluish green. With the main Madrox head in blue. Oh, and then purple is the descent.
Oh, him falling.
Him falling to his death. And yeah, Dormammu thinks it's fun that there's a weird ghostly bearded individual who is somehow involved in this. How tragically marvelous. And then we get a grin from Madrox with some glowing golden eyes. He breaks the golden bands of Sidorak and creates a bunch of dupes. And they get their Eyes of March on. They pick up all these stabby band leftover shards from the bands of Sidorak and do lots of stabbing on Dormammu. They're taunting him. It's a thing. Now I'm just trying to find that reference to the War of Hells on Earth or something.
We can ask Chandler about that. Chandler's a big...
Oh, he does love Doctor Strange.
Yes, because you're not finding this reference. It is somewhere in dialogue.
It's true.
So there's a big group of people, group of dupes.
Lots of stabbing. And then a big absorption, lots of magic things. Dormammu is being evicted off of Earth because Earth rejects him.
Oh, rude.
Yes. And in his internal monologue, he's like, oh, someone want to tell me what the hell is going on? And then he starts speaking in a speaking bubble in response. Oh, here it is. And, you're talking to me? My inner monologue? That's bizarre, unusual. I was going to say strange. Har har. And it is Doctor Strange, who took refuge in the body of Madrox's disciple.
So he comes out and he's like, oh, don't worry.
Dang.
Like, you did a great job killing that villain. I can take it from here. I can send you back.
Yeah. Like, as a thank you for letting me chill out in your body.
Yeah.
Like, it's a... almost a Dr. Manhattan kind of Dr. Strange. Blue, glowy, way more buff than I imagine he is in real life.
Yes.
And yeah, he's like, I will send you back. You'll go back along your current, your trajectory and realities, but you should end up where you need to. I don't see why you'd have to die again.
Yeah. So wait. It's a big portal, and he's like, oh, no, like, I'm less powerful as this
ghost. I can't control it. There's lots of shards, and this Jamie gets stabbed in the forehead as he goes through.
And he's falling through the portal.
Yeah, and that Doctor Strange can't help him anymore.
And then we get Jamie getting pulled out of the ice bath.
Yeah,
he was packed
in dry ice by Layla.
Yeah.
And she's there, she kisses him, she's warm, and he's oh so cold, and they end up having sex.
Yep.
That's how she warms him up.
Yep.
And then, back at the movie lot, we got that portal opening, and out falls Verona, Deathlok, and the Dormammu Doctor Strange.
Yep. It's not over.
No, and it's the end, question mark. So Deathlok is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, isn't he a thing before all of this?
Oh, yeah.
So this is just like another Deathlok that comes into this universe.
Well, it's Captain America as Deathlok.
Sure.
It is. It's Steve Rogers.
Deathhawk isn't Steve Rogers?
No. No.
I don't know anything about Deathlock.
Deathlock is Michael Collins.
Oh. Cool. So, I don't know her.
Okay. Well, I have some issues in the basement if you need to read. So that.
That's the
That's the whole arc.
Yeah. It was good. It was a solid read through. Like I said, I had a hard time putting it down. I wanted to know what happened. I wanted explanations for all the things. And I mostly got it with the ghost of Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was a fun read. It was a different direction. Like, I feel we get a good balance of really grounded, gritty detective sort of things with a superhero element. But then we also get some really bizarre off the wall stuff too.
Yeah.
Like we've seen it before with Hela.
Oh,
and yeah. That stuff, like,
there's been a mystical bent,
yes,
in the past. Like, the series has been edging more and more towards the mystical end of things.
And in a letters page somewhere in there, I'm not gonna go back and find it, but someone was writing in to Peter David and saying, like, you're doing a great job. Like, yeah, it's an X title, but you also are doing a good job of making sure it's its own thing.
Yes, like. It doesn't feel like a X-Men book necessarily. Yeah.
Yep. It's more like you have your own little corner, you're playing in it, and it's great that you're able to tell these stories.
Yeah. It's not the typical humans versus mutants.
Yeah.
Sphere.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's it. We're getting steadily closer to the end of X-Factor.
I know. It's sad.
Yeah. But there'll be more X-Factor after it, don't worry.
Yes, for 20 issues.
Yeah, what? Oh, that one.
All new X-Factor. Yes. 20.
And then Peter David's original run.
Yeah.
There's plenty of X-Factor, just like there's plenty of Star Trek.
It's true.
All right, everyone, let us know your thoughts and feels about this set of issues. Did you really enjoy it?
Did you know that Deathlock was a thing before and that it wasn't Steve Rogers who was Deathlock?
Right.
I'm sure everyone will say yes.
Maybe. So follow us, X Factor Files Podcast on Instagram. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes or your podcast catcher of choice. Reviews actually do something. So just like click on over right now to your app store or your podcast server. Find us. Be like, they're great. That's it.
Two words. That's all you need.
Yes. And not they suck. Please just keep that to yourselves.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.